Howdy. Thanks tons for downloading volume 240 in the never-ending Zeke's Gallery series of podcasts. Carmen Starnino does a wonderful job of introducing both Asa Boxer and Anita Leahy, so I think I'm just going to shut up.
We're here to launch. This is the Montreal launch for Anita Leahy's Out to Dry in Cape Breton, her first book. But we thought we would take the opportunity to introduce you to a future signal poet, someone who will be publishing his first book next year, Asa Boxer. Asa's poems have been published in Poetry London. He won first prize in the poetry category in last year's CBC literary competition. And one of his poems was recently chosen for the prestigious Oxford Broadside series. This is a series that includes people like Seamus Heaney and Paul Muldoon. So these are good signs, and I'd like to invite Asa up here to read a few poems.
Thanks, Carmen. It's really a pleasure to be here for Anita's launch. We met when we were launching the new canon together, and I think we were both very much impressed with each other with each other's work, and we probably didn't foresee that we'd be reading together today, and it's really a pleasure and an honor. I'm going to read just a few poems. Carmen was mentioning earlier the Oxford Poetry Broadside. They published a poem called To Needle the Earth, and I have it here, and I'll read it to you. To Needle the Earth. Its blossoms growing blind with anticipation, the tree that's been training, tying knots in its skin, and from them flying a thousand little flags and kites, holds its sway over the ground, nest-worthy and cradle-sure, a hand to the bird, a loom to the spider, a toehold to the lichen, a back-scratch to the bear, a spiraling argument to the chipmunk and squirrel, a wild and airborne botanical town. Whatever its lean, in hush and in howl, the tree holds its poise. To every claw slash and talon bite, the wood responds with sweetness, but the sap that seals the score and suckles a thousand stems will capture and kill a fly. Before it unfurls forms more outrageous than a fine-toothed green, the tree must channel a sapling's enthusiasm to twig, must run with the amber it finds in the rot, blossoms stirred up from the syrup song of its bark-lodged heart. Berries swell and stop the flowers. Gone is the flare, and gone are the delicate powders. Nutshell, pine cone, calabash, and peel. The tree hatches its palate-baffling fruit and seeds to needle the earth to its works. There was another series that I put together called A Day of Rest, which I can't remember how many pieces that was, maybe about seven or eight. And Poetry London took an interest in that recently, and a few of those poems have been published just this past month, or it's actually this month, July. So I'll read two poems that were published in there from that series, A Day of Rest. The first one's called The Hunter. The hunter's desire is for the world to stand still while he waits in ambush, embossed in the brush. Tranquility his cover, silence his closest ally, and his darkest enemy is sleep. At rest, the hunter learns to hunt amusements. He imagines a fairy hut of twig and leaf, considers what a man is blind to, what a toad can see, or what it might be like to be a bee in a world of orioles buzzing toward beacons of light. The hunter keeps alert by making puzzles out of nature. he endeavors to observe, and then to interrupt the wood's routine. He puts words to bird calls. He teaches himself Morse. He deciphers the meaning of bullfrog groans, cracks the cicada code. Then with a bang, he blots a brain. He cracks the skull with a bullet. And with the hot head of a steel worm, he bores the final hole and drops a world of grace in its tracks. 1,000 feathers rustle the leaves, and the air is flustered with flaps and flutters. Hooves painfully twitch in the air. A man breaks from the angry bush. He hurries over to bind his kill. He has triumphed. And forgotten is the world of the bee, the vision of the toad, the chatter of birds, the language of the bullfrog, the key to the cicada's code. And the next one is called The Polar Bear. Now, there's probably an unfamiliar word in here for everyone, and that would be apollinia. Now, apparently there's an ecological reason for there being liquid areas where the ocean breathes in the Arctic. Basically, it's a hole where the ice is broken, and there's a little ecological center that centers around this breathing area because animals can come up for air, and it's also a hunting ground for those who are looking for the animals coming up for air. I believe it's a word of Russian origin, so polynya. Around the polynya, the polar bear mills like a vacationer around a pool. Only this bear's pleasure is wrapped in stillness, a sub-zero oasis in baffles of snow. The bear, who lumbering travels his seasons, driven by hunger, who molts in the spring, who winters in the den he dug with the wide paw now thrown over his snout to keep warm, the bear is at rest, like a blanket of snow recovering. His muscles are at rest like a grenade, a landmine, a trap door. His jaw is at rest like a fox trap, a clamp. His paws, their non-retractable claws, his 42 teeth dead still as a hunter, at rest like a bullet asleep in its chamber. His organs are slow-burning embers, his brain a tank of gasoline. The bear dreams of a berry on the tip of a twig, the weight of a seal swollen like a fruit on the claw of a branch. His swaddle of blubber twitches at the imagined windfall, the thump of a fist of raw flesh pounding at his icy door. He rests, and in his sleep he's turning seal into bear. The polar bear is an animal of ice who must rest or swim for the heat that consumes him. His fur is the fire that blazes from his charred black skin. Two more pieces. This one is included in the New Canon Anthology, which I mentioned before. It's called The Lobster. And I know Anita...
I requested it.
Yes, requested it and enjoys it, and it's a good segue into her work as well. So this is a lobster that I think everyone's familiar with, and I'll say no more. The lobster. Sunk behind its dingy window in a supermarket aquarium, the lobster turns a muzzy eye on the great elan of air. Exposed to every scrutiny, it waits, claws bound, an antenna snapped, not a crawl space nor a shadow, still as stone, invisible, it hopes. It hopes a lobster's coral hopes. It thinks a lobster's murky thoughts. But its brains cannot conceive the sea outside the lobster shell. Desire thus keeps slim to fit the narrow life within. You will never hear the baffled lobster cry, "Oh, what crime could be so great it moved the sea to single out a bloated shrimp like me?" It's a muffled clatter, this life that smudges by. Rattling cartloads of death perambulate past. Smutchy children nose and thump the glass. Vague eyes and teeth wink pearl hints of what's to come. This wispy world suffused with light, a lobster's carnival afterlife, where each impression colors and brews through nerve and muscle and sinew, where thorny heat keeps life fired to a reddening shriek, and God boils it through. And to conclude, I'm going to read one of Anita's poems, also from the New Canon. Perhaps I would have chosen something else that I had her book in advance, but I look forward to reading the rest. Okay, this is from her series called Cape Breton Relative, and this is chapter 5, in which you are told, once and for all, about fishermen. Greedy lot, always after complaining. Gossipers, oh my dear, if you heard them. And tender, stay right at home when it's raining. 300 grand, imagine such a sum for a month of lowering, hoisting. Them pining for more, couldn't smile either, sea might thumb their arses. Never please, no joys, bunch of souks with fiberglass toys. Greedy lot they are, always after bellowing. The price of this, government that, rough weather. In the old days, lobstermen drowned and kept rowing. Now it's waterproof suits and GPS, feather pillows, motors which shine. Whispers growing on screen, a white cold pulse. Together, they make the ocean talk. Rocks here, sand there. A rich man's traps come prepared. You reckon they're windblown, muted by the sea? Your grandfather was a superstitious fart with Palm Sunday crosses in his bow, who hated to float, drank till 3, till 4, till the most vicious rowing got him nowhere. His pilfered traps, polluted nights in his watery try heart, cleaning dishes no one was meant to catch. Times he fell gentle, kind as sin, whiskey, salt, and guilt. It's them what mar your kin. Thank you.